moved, so the other two fell with a fright. I kept my piece in my hand still without firing, being willing to keep my charge ready because I had given the Spaniard my pistol and sword. So I called to Friday and bade him run up to the tree from whence we first fired and fetch the arms which lay there that had been discharged, which he did with great swiftness. And then, giving him my musket, I sat down myself to load all the rest again, and bade them come to me when they wanted. While I was loading these pieces, there happened a fierce engagement between the Spaniard and one of the savages, who made at him with one of their great wooden swords, the weapon that was to have killed him before if I had not prevented it. The Spaniard, who was as bold and brave as could be imagined, though weak, had fought the Indian a good while and had cut two great wounds on his head. But the savage, being a stout, lusty fellow, closing in with him, had thrown him down, being faint, and was wringing my sword out of his hand. When the Spaniard, though undermost, wisely quitting the sword, drew the pistol from his girdle, and shot the savage through the body and killed him upon the spot, before I, who was running to help him, could come near him. Friday, being now left to his liberty, pursued the flying wretches, with no weapon in his hand but his hatchet. And with that he dispatched those three who, as I said before, were wounded at first, and fallen, and all the rest he could come up with. And the Spaniard coming to me for a gun, I gave him one of the fowling pieces, with which he pursued two of the savages and wounded them both. But as he was not able to run, they both got from him into the wood, where Friday pursued them and killed one of them, but the other was too nimble for him. And though he was wounded, yet had plunged himself into the sea, and swam with all his might off to those two who were left in the canoe. Which three in the canoe with one wounded, that we knew not whether he died or no, were all that escaped our hands of 21. The account of the whole is as follows. 3 killed at our first shot from the tree. 2 killed at the next shot. 2 killed by Friday in the boat. 2 killed by Friday of those at first wounded. 1 killed by Friday in the wood, 3 killed by the Spaniard. 4 killed being found dropped here and there of the wounds, or killed by Friday in his chase of them. 4 escaped in the boat, whereof 1 wounded, if not dead. 21 in all. Those that were in the canoe worked hard to get out of gunshot, and though Friday made 2 or 3 shots at them, I did not find that he hit any of them. Friday would fain have had me take one of their canoes and pursue them, and indeed I was very anxious about their escape, lest, carrying the news home to their people, they should come back perhaps with 200 or 300 of the canoes and devour us by mere multitude. So I consented to pursue them by sea, and running to one of their canoes I jumped in and bade Friday follow me. But when I was in the canoe I was surprised to find another poor creature lie there, bound hand and foot as the Spaniard was for the slaughter, and almost dead with fear, not knowing what was the matter. For he had not been able to look up over the side of the boat, he was tied so hard, neck and heels, and had been tied so long that he had really but little life in him. I immediately cut the twisted flags or rushes which they had bound him with, and would have helped him up, but he could not stand or speak, but groaned most piteously, believing, it seemed still, that he was only unbound in order to be killed. When Friday came to him, I bade him speak to him, and tell him of his deliverance, and pulling out my bottle, made him give the poor wretch a dram, which, with the news of his being delivered, revived him, and he sat up in the boat. But when Friday came to hear him speak and look in his face, it would have moved anyone to tears to have seen how Friday kissed him, embraced him, hugged him, cried, laughed, hallooed, jumped about, danced, sang. Then cried again, wrung his hands, beat his own face and head, and then sang and jumped about again like a distracted creature. It was a good while before I could make him speak to me or tell me what was the matter. But when he came a little to himself, he told me that it was his father. It is not easy for me to express how it moved me to see what ecstasy and filial affection had worked in this poor savage at the sight of his father, and of his being delivered from death. Nor, indeed, can I describe half the extravagances of his affection after this. For he went into the boat and out of the boat a great many times. When he went into him, he would sit down by him, open his breast, and hold his father's head close to his bosom for many minutes together to nourish it. Then he took his arms and ankles, which were numbed and stiff with the binding, and chafed and rubbed them with his hands. And I, perceiving what the case was, gave him some rum out of my bottle to rub them with, which did them a great deal of good. This affair put an end to our pursuit of the canoe with the other savages, who were now almost out of sight. And it was happy for us that we did not, for it blew so hard within 2 hours after, and before they could be got a quarter of their way, and continued blowing so hard all night, and that from the northwest, which was against them, they could not suppose their boat could live, or that they ever reach their own coast. But to return to Friday, he was so busy about his father that I could not find in my heart to take him off for some time. But after I thought he could leave him a little, I called him to me, and he came jumping and laughing and pleased to the highest extreme. Then I asked him if he had given his father any bread. He shook his head and said, "None. Ugly dog eat all up self." I then gave him a cake of bread out of a little pouch I carried on purpose. I also gave him a dram for himself. But he would not taste it, but carried it to his father. I had in my pocket 2 or 3 bunches of raisins, so I gave him a handful of them for his father. He had no sooner given his father these raisins, but I saw him come out of the boat and run away as if he had been bewitched, for he was the swiftest fellow on his feet that ever I saw. I say, he ran at such a rate that he was out of sight, as it were, in an instant. And though I called and hallooed out, too, after him, it was all one. Away he went, and in a quarter of an hour I saw him come back again, though not so fast as he went. And as he came nearer, I found his pace slacker, because he had something in his hand. When he came up to me, I found he had been quite home for an earthen jug, or pot, to bring his father some fresh water, and that he had got 2 more cakes, or loaves of bread. The bread he gave me, but the water he carried to his father. However, as I was very thirsty too, I took a little of it. The water revived his father more than all the rum or spirits I had given him, for he was fainting with thirst. When his father had drunk, I called to him to know if there was any water left. He said, "Yes," and I bade him give it to the poor Spaniard, who was in as much want of it as his father. And I sent one of the cakes that Friday brought to the Spaniard too, who was indeed very weak, and was reposing himself upon a green place under the shade of a tree, and whose limbs were also very stiff, and very much swelled with a rude bandage he had been tied with. When I saw that upon Friday's coming to him with the water he sat up and drank, and took the bread and began to eat, I went to him and gave him a handful of raisins. He looked up in my face with all the tokens of gratitude and thankfulness that could appear in any countenance, but was so weak, notwithstanding he had so exerted himself in the fight, that he could not stand up upon his feet. He tried to do it 2 or 3 times, but was really not able. His ankles were so swelled and so painful to him. So I bade him sit still, and caused Friday to rub his ankles and bathe them with rum, as he had done his father's. I observed the poor affectionate creature every 2 minutes, or perhaps less, all the while he was here, turn his head about to see if his father was in the same place and posture as he left him sitting. And at last he found he was not to be seen, at which he started up, and without speaking a word flew with that swiftness to him that one could scarce perceive his feet to touch the ground as he went. But when he came, he only found he had laid himself down, to ease his limbs, so Friday came back to me presently. And then I spoke to the Spaniard to let Friday help him off if he could, and lead him to the boat, and then he should carry him to our dwelling where I would take care of him. But Friday, a lusty, strong fellow, took the Spaniard upon his back and carried him away to the boat and set him down softly upon the side or gunwale of the canoe, with his feet in the inside of it. And then lifting him quite in, he set him close to his father, and presently stepping out again launched the boat off and paddled it along the shore faster than I could walk, though the wind blew pretty hard, too. So he brought them both safe into our creek, and leaving them in the boat, ran away to fetch the other canoe. As he passed me, I spoke to him and asked him whither he went. He told me, "Go fetch more boat." So away he went like the wind, for sure never man or horse ran like him. And he had the other canoe in the creek almost as soon as I got to it by land. So he wafted me over, and then went to help our new guests out of the boat, which he did, but they were neither of them able to walk, so that poor Friday knew not what to do. To remedy this I went to work in my thought, and, calling to Friday to bid them sit down on the bank while he came to me, I soon made a kind of hand-barrow to lay them on, and Friday and I carried them both up together upon it between us. But when we got them to the outside of our wall, or fortification, we were at a worse loss than before, for it was impossible to get them over, and I was resolved not to break it down. So I set to work again, and Friday and I, in about 2 hours' time, made a very handsome tent, covered with old sails, and above that with boughs of trees, being in the space without our outward fence, and between that and the grove of young wood which I had planted. And here we made them 2 beds of such things as I had, viz. Of good rice straw, with blankets laid upon it to lie on, and another to cover them on each bed. My island was now peopled, and I thought myself very rich in subjects, and it was a merry reflection which I frequently made how like a king I looked. First of all, the whole country was my own property, so that I had an undoubted right of dominion. Secondly, my people were perfectly subjected. I was absolutely lord and lawgiver. They all owed their lives to me, and were ready to lay down their lives if there had been occasion for it for me. It was remarkable, too, I had but three subjects, and they were of three different religions. My man Friday was a Protestant, his father was a pagan and a cannibal, and the Spaniard was a papist. However, I allowed liberty of conscience throughout my dominions. But this is by the way. As soon as I had secured my two weak, rescued prisoners, and given them shelter and a place to rest them upon, I began to think of making some provision for them. And the first thing I did, I ordered Friday to take a yearling goat, betwixt a kid and a goat, out of my particular flock to be killed. When I cut off the hinder quarter and chopping it into small pieces, I set Friday to work to boiling and stewing, and made them a very good dish, I assure you, of flesh and broth. And as I cooked it without doors, for I made no fire within my inner wall, so I carried it all into the new tent, and having set a table there for them, I sat down and ate my own dinner also with them, and, as well as I could, cheered them and encouraged them. Friday was my interpreter, especially to his father, and indeed to the Spaniard too, for the Spaniard spoke the language of the savages pretty well. After we had dined, or rather supped, I ordered Friday to take one of the canoes and go and fetch our muskets and other firearms, which, for want of time, we had left upon the place of battle. And the next day I ordered him to go and bury the dead bodies of the savages which lay open to the sun and would presently be offensive. I also ordered him to bury the horrid remains of their barbarous feast, which I could not think of doing myself. Nay, I could not bear to see them if I went that way. All which he punctually performed and effaced the very appearance of the savages being there, so that when I went again, I could scarce know where it was otherwise than by the corner of the wood pointing to the place. I then began to enter into a little conversation with my two new subjects, and first I set Friday to inquire of his father what he thought of the escape of the savages in that canoe, and whether he might expect a return of them with a power too great for us to resist. His first opinion was that the savages in the boat never could live out the storm which blew that night they went off, but must of necessity be drowned or driven south to those other shores, where they were as sure to be devoured as they were to be drowned if they were cast away. But as to what they would do if they came safe on shore, he said he knew not. But it was his opinion that they were so dreadfully frightened with the manner of their being attacked, the noise and the fire, that he believed they would tell the people they were all killed by thunder and lightning, not by the hand of man, and that the two which appeared, viz. Friday and I, were two heavenly spirits or furies, come down to destroy them, and not men with weapons. This, he said, he knew, because he heard them all cry out so in their language one to another, for it was impossible for them to conceive that a man could dart fire and speak thunder and kill at a distance without lifting up the hand, as was done now, and this old savage was in the right. For, as I understood since, by other hands, the savages never attempted to go over to the island afterwards. They were so terrified with the accounts given by those four men, for it seems they did escape the sea, that they believed whoever went to that enchanted island would be destroyed with fire from the gods. This, however, I knew not, and therefore was under continual apprehensions for a good while, and kept always upon my guard with all my army. For as there were now four of us, I would have ventured upon 100 of them fairly in the open field at any time. Chapter 17. Visit of Mutineers. In a little time, however, no more canoes appearing, the fear of their coming wore off, and I began to take my former thoughts of a voyage to the main into consideration, being likewise assured by Friday's father that I might depend upon good usage from their nation on his account if I would go. But my thoughts were a little suspended when I had a serious discourse with the Spaniard, and when I understood that there were 16 more of his countrymen and Portuguese, who, having been cast away and made their escape to that side, lived there at peace, indeed, with the savages, but were very sore put to it for necessaries, and indeed for life. I asked him all the particulars of their voyage, and found they were a Spanish ship, bound from the Rio de la Plata to the Havana, being directed to leave their loading there, which was chiefly hides and silver, and to bring back what European goods they could meet with there. That they had 5 Portuguese seamen on board, whom they took out of another wreck. That 5 of their own men were drowned when first the ship was lost, and that these escaped through infinite dangers and hazards, and arrived almost starved on the cannibal coast, where they expected to have been devoured every moment. He told me they had some arms with them, but they were perfectly useless, for that they had neither powder nor ball, the washing of the sea having spoiled all their powder but a little, which they used at their first landing to provide themselves with some food. I asked him what he thought would become of them there, and if they had formed any design of making their escape. He said they had many consultations about it, but that having neither vessel nor tools to build one, nor provisions of any kind, their councils always ended in tears and despair. I asked him how he thought they would receive a proposal from me which might tend towards an escape, and whether, if they were all here, it might not be done. I told him with freedom I feared mostly their treachery and ill usage of me if I put my life in their hands, for that gratitude was no inherent virtue in the nature of men, nor did men always square their dealings by the obligations they had received so much as they did by the advantages they expected. I told him it would be very hard that I should be made the instrument of their deliverance, and that they should afterwards make me their prisoner in New Spain, where an Englishman was certain to be made a sacrifice, what necessity or what accident soever brought him thither, and that I had rather be delivered up to the savages and be devoured alive than fall into the merciless claws of the priests and be carried into the Inquisition. I added that otherwise I was persuaded, if they were all here, we might, with so many hands, build a bark large enough to carry us all away, either to the Brazils southward, or to the islands or Spanish coast northward. But that if, in requital, they should, when I had put weapons into their hands, carry me by force among their own people, I might be ill-used for my kindness to them and make my case worse than it was before. He answered, with a great deal of candour and ingenuousness, that their condition was so miserable, and that they were so sensible of it that he believed they would abhor the thought of using any man unkindly that should contribute to their deliverance, and that, if I pleased, he would go to them with the old man and discourse with them about it, and return again and bring me their answer. That he would make conditions with them upon their solemn oath that they should be absolutely under my direction as their commander and captain, and they should swear upon the holy sacraments and gospel to be true to me, and go to such Christian country as I should agree to, and no other, and to be directed wholly and absolutely by my orders till they were landed safely in such country as I intended, and that he would bring a contract from them under their hands for that purpose. Then he told me he would first swear to me himself that he would never stir from me as long as he lived till I gave him orders, and that he would take my side to the last drop of his blood if there should happen the least breach of faith among his countrymen. He told me they were all of them very civil, honest men, and they were under the greatest distress imaginable, having neither weapons nor clothes nor any food, but at the mercy and discretion of the savages, out of all hopes of ever returning to their own country, and that he was sure, if I would undertake their relief, they would live and die by me. Upon these assurances I resolved to venture to relieve them, if possible, and to send the old savage and this Spaniard over to them to treat. But when we had got all things in readiness to go, the Spaniard himself started an objection which had so much prudence in it on one hand, and so much sincerity on the other hand, that I could not but be very well satisfied in it, and, by his advice, put off the deliverance of his comrades for at least half a year. The case was thus. He had been with us now about a month, during which time I'd let him see in what manner I had provided with the assistance of Providence for my support, and he saw evidently what stock of corn and rice I had laid up, which, though it was more than sufficient for myself, yet it was not sufficient without good husbandry for my family, now it was increased to 4. But much less would it be sufficient if his countrymen, who were, as he said, 16, still alive, should come over. And least of all would it be sufficient to victual our vessel, if we should build one, for a voyage to any of the Christian colonies of America. So he told me he thought it would be more advisable to let him and the other 2 dig and cultivate some more land, as much as I could spare seed to sow, and that we should wait another harvest, that we might have a supply of corn for his countrymen when they should come. For want might be a temptation to them to disagree, or not to think themselves delivered otherwise than out of one difficulty into another. "You know," says he, The children of Israel, though they rejoiced at first for their being delivered out of Egypt, yet rebelled even against God himself that delivered them when they came to want bread in the wilderness. His caution was so seasonable, and his advice so good, that I could not but be very well pleased with his proposal, as well as I was satisfied with his fidelity. So we fell to digging, all four of us, as well as the wooden tools we were furnished with permitted. And in about a month's time, by the end of which it was seed time, we had got as much land cured and trimmed up as we sowed 22 bushels of barley on, and 16 jars of rice, which was, in short, all the seed we had to spare. Indeed, we left ourselves barely sufficient, for our own food for the 6 months that we had to expect our crop. That is to say, reckoning from the time we set our seed aside for sowing, for it is not to be supposed it is 6 months in the ground in that country. Having now society enough, and our numbers being sufficient to put us out of fear of the savages if they had come, unless their number had been very great, we went freely all over the island whenever we found occasion. And as we had our escape or deliverance upon our thoughts, it was impossible, at least for me, to have the means of it out of mine. For this purpose I marked out several trees, which I thought fit for our work, and I set Friday and his father to cut them down. And then I caused the Spaniard, to whom I imparted my thoughts on that affair, to oversee and direct their work. I showed them with what indefatigable pains I had hewed a large tree into single planks, and I caused them to do the like, till they made about a dozen large planks of good oak, near 2 feet broad, 35 feet long, and from 2 inches to 4 inches thick. What prodigious labour it took up, any one may imagine. At the same time I contrived to increase my little flock of tame goats as much as I could. And for this purpose I made Friday and the Spaniard go out one day, and myself with Friday the next day, for we took our turns, and by this means we got about 20 young kids to breed up with the rest. For whenever we shot the dam, we saved the kids and added them to our flock. But above all, the season for curing the grapes coming on, I caused such a prodigious quantity to be hung up in the sun that, I believe, had we been at Alicant, where the raisins of the sun are cured, we could have filled 60 or 80 barrels. And these, with our bread, formed a great part of our food. Very good living, too, I assure you, for they are exceedingly nourishing. It was now harvest, and our crop in good order. It was not the most plentiful increase I had seen in the island, but, however, it was enough to answer our end. For from 22 bushels of barley we brought in and thrashed out above 220 bushels, and the like in proportion of the rice, which was store enough for our food to the next harvest, though all the 16 Spaniards had been on shore with me. Or, if we had been ready for a voyage, it would very plentifully have victualled our ship to have carried us to any part of the world, that is to say, any part of America. When we had thus housed and secured our magazine of corn, we fell to work to make more wickerware, viz. Great baskets in which we kept it. And the Spaniard was very handy and dexterous at this part, and often blamed me that I did not make some things for defence of this kind of work, but I saw no need of it. And now, having a full supply of food for all the guests I expected, I gave the Spaniard leave to go over to the main, to see what he could do with those he had left behind him there. I gave him a strict charge not to bring any man who would not first swear in the presence of himself and the old savage that he would in no way injure, fight with, or attack the person he should find in the island, who is so kind as to send for them in order to their deliverance, but that they would stand by him and defend him against all such attempts, and wherever they went would be entirely under and subjected to his command, and that this should be put in writing and signed in their hands. How they were to have done this, when I knew they had neither pen nor ink, was a question which we never asked. Under these instructions, the Spaniard and the old savage, the father of Friday, went away in one of the canoes which they might be said to have come in, or rather were brought in when they came as prisoners to be devoured by the savages. I gave each of them a musket with a firelock on it, and about 8 charges of powder and ball, charging them to be very good husbands of both, and not to use either of them but upon urgent occasions. This was a cheerful work, being the first measures used by me in view of my deliverance for now 27 years and some days. I gave them provisions of bread and of dried grapes, sufficient for themselves for many days, and sufficient for all the Spaniards, for about 8 days' time. And wishing them a good voyage, I saw them go, agreeing with them about a signal they should hang out at their return, by which I should know them again when they came back, at a distance, before they came on shore. They went away with a fair gale on the day that the moon was at full, by my account, in the month of October, but as for an exact reckoning of days after I had once lost it, I could never recover it again. Nor had I kept even the number of years so punctually as to be sure I was right, though, as it proved when I afterwards examined my account, I found I had kept a true reckoning of years. It was no less than 8 days I had waited for them when a strange and unforeseen accident intervened, of which the like has not perhaps been heard of in history. I was fast asleep in my hutch one morning, when my man Friday came running in to me and called aloud, "Master, master, they are come, they are come!" I jumped up, and regardless of danger I went, as soon as I could get my clothes on, through my little grove, which, by the way, was by this time grown to be a very thick wood. I say, regardless of danger, I went without my arms, which was not my custom to do. But I was surprised when, turning my eyes to the sea, I presently saw a boat at about a league and a half distance standing in for the shore, with a shoulder of mutton sail, as they call it, and the wind blowing pretty fair to bring them in. Also I observed presently that they did not come from that side which the shore lay on, but from the southernmost end of the island. Upon this I called Friday in and bade him lie close, for these were not the people we looked for, and that we might not know yet whether they were friends or enemies. In the next place I went in to fetch my perspective glass to see what I could make of them. And having taken the ladder out, I climbed up to the top of the hill, as I used to do when I was apprehensive of anything, and to take my view the plainer without being discovered. I had scarce set my foot upon the hill when my eye plainly discovered a ship lying at anchor, at about 2 leagues and a half distance from me south-south-east, but not above a league and a half from the shore. By my observation it appeared plainly to be an English ship, and the boat appeared to be an English longboat. I cannot express the confusion I was in, though the joy of seeing a ship, and one that I had reason to believe was manned by my own countrymen, and consequently friends, was such as I cannot describe. But yet I had some secret doubts hung about me. I cannot tell from whence they came, bidding me keep upon my guard. In the first place, it occurred to me to consider what business an English ship could have in that part of the world, since it was not the way to or from any part of the world where the English had any traffic. And I knew there had been no storms to drive them in there in distress, and that if they were really English, it was most probable that they were here upon no good design, and that I had better continue as I was than fall into the hands of thieves and murderers. Let no man despise the secret hints and notices of danger which sometimes are given him when he may think there is no possibility of its being real. That such hints and notices are given us, I believe few that have made any observation of things can deny. That they are certain discoveries of an invisible world, and a converse of spirits, we cannot doubt. And if the tendency of them seems to be to warn us of danger, why should we not suppose they are from some friendly agent, whether supreme or inferior and subordinate is not the question, and that they are given for our good? The present question abundantly confirms me in the justice of this reasoning. For had I not been made cautious by this secret admonition, come it from whence it will, I had been done inevitably, and in a far worse condition than before, as you will see presently. I had not kept myself long in this posture till I saw the boat draw near the shore, as if they looked for a creek to thrust in at, for the convenience of landing. However, as they did not come quite far enough, they did not see the little inlet where I formerly landed my rafts, but ran their boat on shore upon the beach, at about half a mile from me, which was very happy for me. For otherwise they would have landed just at my door, as I may say, and would soon have beaten me out of my castle, and perhaps have plundered me of all I had. When they were on shore I was fully satisfied they were Englishmen, at least most of them. One or two I thought were Dutch, but it did not prove so. There were in all 11 men, whereof 3 of them I found were unarmed, and, as I thought, bound. And when the first 4 or 5 of them were jumped on shore, they took those 3 out of the boat as prisoners. One of the 3 I could perceive using the most passionate gestures of entreaty, affliction, and despair, even to a kind of extravagance. The other 2 I could perceive lifted up their hands sometimes, and appeared concerned indeed, but not to such a degree as the first. I was perfectly confounded at the sight, and knew not what the meaning of it should be. Friday called out to me in English, as well as he could, "Oh, master! You see Englishmans eat prisoner as well as savage mans." "Why, Friday," says I, "do you think they're going to eat them, then?" "Yes," says Friday, "they will eat them." "No, no," says I. "Friday, I am afraid they will murder them indeed, but you may be sure they will not eat them." All this while I had no thought of what the matter really was, but stood trembling with a horror of the sight, expecting every moment when the three prisoners should be killed. Nay, once I saw one of the villains lift up his arm with a great cutlass, as the seamen call it, or sword, to strike one of the poor men, and I expected to see him fall every moment, at which all the blood in my body seemed to run chill in my veins. I wished heartily now for the Spaniard and the savage that had gone with him, or that I had any way to have come undiscovered within shot of them, that I might have secured the three men, for I saw no firearms they had among them. But it fell out to my mind another way. After I had observed the outrageous usage of the three men by the insolent seamen, I observed the fellows run scattering about the island, as if they wanted to see the country. I observed that the three other men had liberty to go also where they pleased, but they sat down all three upon the ground, very pensive, and looked like men in despair. This put me in mind of the first time when I came on shore and began to look about me, how I gave myself over for lost, how wildly I looked round me, what dreadful apprehensions I had, and how I lodged in the tree all night for fear of being devoured by wild beasts. As I knew nothing that night of the supply I was to receive by the providential driving of the ship nearer the land by the storms and tide, by which I have since been so long nourished and supported, so these three poor desolate men knew nothing how certain of deliverance and supply they were, how near it was to them, and how effectually and really they were in a condition of safety, at the same time that they thought themselves lost and their case desperate. So little do we see before us in the world, and so much reason have we to depend cheerfully upon the great Maker of the world, that he does not leave his creatures so absolutely destitute, but that in the worst circumstances they have always something to be thankful for, and sometimes are nearer deliverance than they imagine. Nay, are even brought to their deliverance by the means by which they seem to be brought to their destruction. It was just at high water when these people came on shore, and while they rambled about to see what kind of a place they were in, they had carelessly stayed till the tide was spent, and the water was ebbed considerably away, leaving their boat aground. They had left two men in the boat, who, as I found afterwards, having drunk a little too much brandy, fell asleep. However, one of them, waking a little sooner than the other, and finding the boat too fast aground for him to stir it, hallooed out for the rest, who were straggling about, upon which they all soon came to the boat. But it was past all their strength to launch her, the boat being very heavy, and the shore on that side being a soft, oozy sand, almost like quicksand. In this condition, like true seamen, who are perhaps the least of all mankind given to forethought, they gave it over, and away they strolled about the country again. And I heard one of them say aloud to another, calling them off from the boat, "Why, let her alone, Jack, can't you? She'll float next tide." By which I was fully confirmed in the main inquiry of what countrymen they were. All this while I kept myself very close, not once daring to stir out of my castle any farther than to my place of observation near the top of the hill, and very glad I was to think how well it was fortified. I knew it was no less than 10 hours before the boat could float again, and by that time it would be dark, and I might be at more liberty to see their motions and to hear their discourse, if they had any. In the meantime I fitted myself up for a battle as before, though with more caution, knowing I had to do with another kind of enemy than I had at first. I ordered Friday also, whom I had made an excellent marksman with his gun, to load himself with arms. I took myself 2 fowling pieces, and I gave him 3 muskets. My figure, indeed, was very fierce. I had my formidable goat-skin coat on, with the great cap I have mentioned, a naked sword by my side, 2 pistols in my belt, and a gun upon each shoulder. It was my design, as I said above, not to have made any attempt till it was dark. But about 2 o'clock, being the heat of the day, I found that they were all gone straggling into the woods, and, as I thought, laid down to sleep. The 3 poor distressed men, too anxious for their condition to get any sleep, had, however, sat down under the shelter of a great tree at about 1/4 mile from me, and, as I thought, out of sight of any of the rest. Upon this, I resolved to discover myself to them and learn something of their condition. Immediately I marched as above, my man Friday at a good distance behind me, as formidable for his arms as I, but not making quite so staring a spectre-like figure as I did. I came as near them undiscovered as I could, and then, before any of them saw me, I called aloud to them in Spanish, "What are ye, gentlemen?" They started up at the noise, but were 10 times more confounded when they saw me, and the uncouth figure that I made. They made no answer at all, but I thought I perceived them just going to fly from me when I spoke to them in English. "Gentlemen," said I, "do not be surprised at me. Perhaps you may have a friend near when you did not expect it."
"He must be sent directly from heaven, then," said one of them very gravely to me, and pulling off his hat at the same time to me. "For our condition is past the help of man."
"All help is from heaven, sir," said I. "But can you put a stranger in the way to help you, for you seem to be in some distress?
I saw you when you landed, and when you seemed to make application to the brutes that came with you, I saw one of them lift up his sword to kill you."
The poor man, with tears running down his face and trembling, looking like one astonished, returned, "Am I talking to God or man? Is it a real man or an angel?"
"Be in no fear about that, sir," said I. "If God had sent an angel to relieve you, he would have come better clothed and armed after another manner than you see me. Pray lay aside your fears. I'm a man, an Englishman, and disposed to assist you. You see, I have one servant only. We have arms and ammunition. Tell us freely, can we serve you?"
"What is your case?"
"Our case, sir," said he, "is too long to tell you while our murderers are so near us. But in short, sir, I was commander of that ship. My men have mutinied against me.
They have been hardly prevailed on not to murder me, and at last have set me on shore in this desolate place with these two men with me, one my mate, the other a passenger, where we expected to perish, believing the place to be uninhabited and know not yet what to think of it."
"Where are these brutes, your enemies?" said I. "Do you know where they are gone?"
"There they lie, sir," said he, pointing to a thicket of trees.
"My heart trembles for fear they have seen us and heard you speak. If they have, they will certainly murder us all."
"Have they any firearms?" said I.
He answered, "They had only two pieces, one of which they left in the boat."
"Well then," said I, "leave the rest to me. I see they are all asleep. It is an easy thing to kill them all, but shall we rather take them prisoners?"
He told me there were two desperate villains among them that it was scarce safe to show any mercy to. But if they were secured, he believed all the rest would return to their duty. I asked him which they were. He told me he could not at that distance distinguish them, but he would obey my orders in anything I would direct.
"Well," says I, "let us retreat out of their view or hearing, lest they awake, and we will resolve further." So they willingly went back with me till the woods covered us from them.
"Look you, sir," said I, "if I venture upon your deliverance, are you willing to make two conditions with me?"
He anticipated my proposals by telling me that both he and the ship, if recovered, should be wholly directed and commanded by me in everything. And if the ship was not recovered, he would live and die with me in what part of the world soever I would send him, and the two men said the same.
"Well," says I, "my conditions are but two. First, that while you stay in this island with me, you will not pretend to any authority here. And if I put arms in your hands, you will, upon all occasions, give them up to me, and do no prejudice to me or mine upon this island, and in the meantime be governed by my orders. Secondly, that if the ship is, or may be, recovered, you will carry me and my man to England, passage free."
He gave me all the assurances that the invention or faith of man could devise that he would comply with these most reasonable demands, and besides would owe his life to me, and acknowledge it upon all occasions as long as he lived.
"Well then," said I, "here are three muskets for you, with powder and ball. Tell me next what you think is proper to be done."
He showed all the testimonies of his gratitude that he was able, but offered to be wholly guided by me. I told him I thought it was very hard venturing anything, but the best method I could think of was to fire on them at once as they lay, and if any were not killed at the first volley and offered to submit, we might save them, and so put it wholly upon God's providence to direct the shot. He said very modestly that he was loath to kill them if he could help it, but that those two were incorrigible villains, and had been the authors of all the mutiny in the ship, and if they escaped we should be undone still, for they would go on board and bring the whole ship's company and destroy us all.
"Well then," says I, "necessity legitimates my advice, for it is the only way to save our lives." However, seeing him still cautious of shedding blood, I told him they should go themselves and manage as they found convenient. In the middle of this discourse we heard some of them awake, and soon after we saw two of them on their feet. I asked him if either of them were the heads of the mutiny. He said, "No."
"Well then," said I, "you may let them escape, and Providence seems to have awakened them on purpose to save themselves. Now, says I, if the rest escape, it is your fault. Animated with this, he took the musket I had given him in his hand and a pistol in his belt and his two comrades with him, with each a piece in his hand. The two men who were with him going first made some noise, at which one of the seamen who was awake turned about, and seeing them coming, cried out to the rest. But it was too late then, for the moment he cried out, they fired. I mean the two men, the captain wisely reserving his own piece. They had so well aimed their shot at the men they knew that one of them was killed on the spot, and the other very much wounded. But not being dead, he started up on his feet, and called eagerly for help to the other. But the captain, stepping to him, told him it was too late to cry for help. He should call upon God to forgive his villainy, and with that word knocked him down with a stock of his musket so that he never spoke more. There were three more in the company, and one of them was slightly wounded. By this time I was come, and when they saw their danger and that it was in vain to resist, they begged for mercy. The captain told them he would spare their lives if they would give him an assurance of their abhorrence of the treachery they had been guilty of, and would swear to be faithful to him in recovering the ship, and afterwards in carrying her back to Jamaica from whence they came. They gave him all the protestations of their sincerity that could be desired, and he was willing to believe them and spare their lives, which I was not against, only that I obliged him to keep them bound hand and foot while they were on the island. While this was doing, I sent Friday with the captain's mate to the boat with orders to secure her and bring away the oars and sails, which they did. And by, three straggling men that were, happily for them, parted from the rest, came back upon hearing the guns fired, and seeing the captain, who was before their prisoner, now their conqueror, they submitted to be bound also. And so our victory was complete. It now remained that the captain and I should inquire into one another's circumstances. I began first and told him my whole history, which he heard with an attention even to amazement, and particularly at the wonderful manner of my being furnished with provisions and ammunition. And indeed, as my story is a whole collection of wonders, it affected him deeply. But when he reflected from thence upon himself, and how I seemed to have been preserved there on purpose to save his life, the tears ran down his face, and he could not speak a word more. After this communication was at an end, I carried him and his two men into my apartment, leading them in just where I came out, viz. At the top of the house, where I refreshed them with such provisions as I had, and showed them all the contrivances I had made during my long, long inhabiting that place. All I showed them, all I said to them, was perfectly amazing. But above all, the captain admired my fortification, and how perfectly I had concealed my retreat with a grove of trees, which, having been now planted nearly 20 years, and the trees growing much faster than in England, was become a little wood, so thick that it was impassable in any part of it but at that one side where I had reserved my little winding passage into it. I told him this was my castle and my residence, but that I had a seat in the country, as most princes have, whither I could retreat upon occasion, and I would show him that too another time. But at present our business was to consider how to recover the ship. He agreed with me as to that, but told me he was perfectly at a loss what measures to take, for that there were still 26 hands on board, who, having entered into a cursed conspiracy by which they had all forfeited their lives to the law, would be hardened in it now by desperation, and would carry it on, knowing that if they were subdued, they would be brought to the gallows as soon as they came to England or to any of the English colonies, and that therefore there would be no attacking them with so small a number as we were. I mused for some time on what he had said, and found it was a very rational conclusion, and that therefore something was to be resolved on speedily, as well to draw the men on board into some snare for their surprise, as to prevent their landing upon us and destroying us. Upon this it presently occurred to me that in a little while the ship's crew, wondering what was become of their comrades and of the boat, would certainly come on shore in their other boat to look for them, and that then, perhaps, they might come armed, and be too strong for us. This he allowed to be rational. Upon this I told him the first thing we had to do was to stave the boat which lay upon the beach, so that they might not carry her off, and, taking everything out of her, leave her so far useless as not to be fit to swim. Accordingly we went on board, took the arms which were left on board out of her, and whatever else we found there, which was a bottle of brandy, and another of rum, a few biscuit cakes, a horn of powder, and a great lump of sugar in a piece of canvas. The sugar was 5 or 6 pounds. all which was very welcome to me, especially the brandy and sugar, of which I had had none left for many years. When we had carried all these things on shore, the oars, mast, sail, and rudder of the boat were carried away before, we knocked a great hole in her bottom, that if they had come strong enough to master us, yet they could not carry off the boat. Indeed, it was not much in my thoughts that we could be able to recover the ship. But my view was, that if they went away without the boat, I did not much question to make her again fit to carry us to the Leeward Islands, and call upon our friends the Spaniards in my way, for I had them still in my thoughts.
Chapter 18. The Ship Recovered. While we were thus preparing our designs, and had first, by main strength, heaved the boat upon the beach, so high that the tide would not float her off at high water mark, and besides had broke a hole in her bottom too big to be quickly stopped, and were set down musing what we should do, we heard the ship fire a gun, and make a waft with her ensign, as a signal for the boat to come on board. But no boat stirred. And they fired several times, making other signals for the boat. At last, when all their signals and firing proved fruitless, and they found the boat did not stir, we saw them, by the help of my glasses, hoist another boat out and row towards the shore. And we found, as they approached, that there were no less than 10 men in her, and that they had firearms with them. As the ship lay almost 2 leagues from the shore, we had a full view of them as they came, and a plain sight even of their faces. Because the tide having set them a little to the east of the other boat, they rowed up under shore to come to the same place where the other had landed, and where the boat lay. By this means, I say, we had a full view of them, and the captain knew the persons and characters of all the men in the boat, of whom, he said, there were 3 very honest fellows, who, he was sure, were led into this conspiracy by the rest, being overpowered and frightened. But that, as for the boatswain, who, it seems, was the chief officer among them, and all the rest, they were as outrageous as any of the ship's crew, and were no doubt made desperate in their new enterprise. And terribly apprehensive he was that they would be too powerful for us. I smiled at him and told him that men in our circumstances were past the operation of fear, that seeing almost every condition that could be was better than that which we were supposed to be in, we ought to expect that the consequence, whether death or life, would be sure to be a deliverance. I asked him what he thought of the circumstances of my life, and whether a deliverance were not worth venturing for. "And where, sir," said I, "is your belief of my being preserved here on purpose to save your life, which elevated you a little while ago?" "For my part," said I, "there seems to be but one thing amiss in all the prospect of it." "What is that?" says he. "Why," said I, "it is that, as you say, there are 3 or 4 honest fellows among them which should be spared. Had they been all of the wicked part of the crew, I should have thought God's providence had singled them out to deliver them into your hands. For depend upon it, every man that comes ashore is our own, and shall die or live as they behave to us." As I spoke this, with a raised voice and a cheerful countenance, I found it greatly encouraged him. So we set vigorously to our business. We had, upon the first appearance of the boats coming from the ship, considered of separating our prisoners, and we had indeed secured them effectually. 2 of them, of whom the captain was less assured than ordinary, I sent with Friday and 1 of the 3 delivered men to my cave, where they were remote enough, and out of danger of being heard or discovered, or of finding their way out of the woods if they could have delivered themselves. Here they left them bound, but gave them provisions, and promised them, if they continued there quietly, to give them their liberty in 1 or 2, but that if they attempted their escape, they should be put to death without mercy. They promised faithfully to bear their confinement with patience, and were very thankful that they had such good usage as to have provisions and light left them, for Friday gave them candles, such as we made ourselves, for their comfort. And they did not know but that he stood sentinel over them at the entrance. The other prisoners had better usage. 2 of them were kept pinioned, indeed, because the captain was not able to trust them. But the other 2 were taken into my service, upon the captain's recommendation, and upon their solemnly engaging to live and die with us. So with them, and the 3 honest men, we were 7 men well armed, and I made no doubt we should be able to deal well enough with the 10 that were coming, considering that the captain had said there were 3 or 4 honest men among them also. As soon as they got to the place where their other boat lay, they ran their boat into the beach and came all on shore, hauling the boat up after them, which I was glad to see, for I was afraid they would rather have left the boat at an anchor some distance from the shore, with some hands in her to guard her, and so we should not be able to seize the boat. Being on shore, the first thing they did, they ran all to their other boat, and it was easy to see they were under a great surprise to find her stripped, as above, of all that was in her, and a great hole in her bottom. After they had mused a while upon this, they set up two or three great shouts, hallooing with all their might to try if they could make their companions hear. But all was to no purpose. Then they came all close in a ring and fired a volley of their small arms, which indeed we heard, and the echoes made the woods ring. But it was all one. Those in the cave, we were sure, could not hear, and those in our keeping, though they heard it well enough, yet durst give no answer to them. They were so astonished at the surprise of this that, as they told us afterwards, they resolved to go all on board again to their ship and let them know that the men were all murdered and the longboat staved. Accordingly, they immediately launched their boat again and got all of them on board. The captain was terribly amazed and even confounded at this, believing they would go on board the ship again and set sail, giving their comrades over for lost, and so he should still lose the ship, which he was in hopes we should have recovered. But he was quickly as much frightened the other way. They had not been long put off with the boat when we perceived them all coming on shore again, but with this new measure in their conduct, which it seems they consulted together upon, viz., to leave three men in the boat, and the rest to go on shore and to go up into the country to look for their fellows. This was a great disappointment to us, for now we were at a loss what to do, as our seizing those seven men on shore would be no advantage to us if we let the boat escape, because they would row away to the ship, and then the rest of them would be sure to weigh and set sail, and so our recovering the ship would be lost. However, we had no remedy but to wait and see what the issue of things might present. The seven men came on shore, and the three who remained in the boat put her off to a good distance from the shore and came to an anchor to wait for them, so that it was impossible for us to come at them in the boat. Those that came on shore kept close together, marching towards the top of the little hill under which my habitation lay, and we could see them plainly, though they could not perceive us. We should have been very glad if they would have come nearer us, so that we might have fired at them, or that they would have gone farther off, that we might come abroad. But when they were come to the brow of the hill, where they could see a great way into the valleys and woods which lay towards the north-east part, and where the island lay lowest, they shouted and hallooed till they were weary, and not caring, it seems, to venture far from the shore, nor far from one another, they sat down together under a tree to consider it. Had they thought fit to have gone to sleep there, as the other part of them had done, they had done the job for us. But they were too full of apprehensions of danger to venture to go to sleep, though they could not tell what the danger was they had to fear. The captain made a very just proposal to me upon this consultation of theirs, viz., that perhaps they would all fire a volley again, to endeavour to make their fellows hear, and that we should all sally upon them just at the juncture when their pieces were all discharged, and they would certainly yield, and we should have them without bloodshed. I liked this proposal, provided it was done while we were near enough to come up to them before they could load their pieces again. But this event did not happen, and we lay still a long time, very irresolute what course to take. At length I told them there would be nothing done, in my opinion, till night. And then, if they did not return to the boat, perhaps we might find a way to get between them and the shore, and so might use some stratagem with them in the boat to get them on shore. We waited a great while, though very impatient for their removing, and were very uneasy when, after long consultation, we saw them all start up and march down towards the sea. It seems they had such dreadful apprehensions of the danger of the place that they resolved to go on board the ship again, give their companions over for lost, and so go on with their intended voyage with the ship. As soon as I perceived them go towards the shore, I imagined it to be as it really was, that they had given over their search and were going back again. And the captain, as soon as I told him my thoughts, was ready to sink at the apprehensions of it, but I presently thought of a stratagem to fetch them back again, and which answered my end to a tittle. I ordered Friday and the captain's mate to go over the little creek westward towards the place where the savages came on shore when Friday was rescued, and so soon as they came to a little rising round, at about half a mile distant, I bid them halloo out as loud as they could, and wait till they found the seamen heard them. But as soon as ever they heard the seamen answer them, they should return it again, and then, keeping out of sight,
take a round, always answering when the others hallooed, to draw them as far into the island and among the woods as possible, and then wheel about again to me by such ways as I directed them. They were just going into the boat when Friday and the mate hallooed, and they presently heard them, and answering, ran along the shore westward towards the voice they heard, when they were stopped by the creek, where the water being up they could not get over, and called for the boat to come up and set them over. As indeed I expected. When they had set themselves over, I observed that the boat being gone a good way into the creek, and, as it were, in a harbour within the land, they took one of the three men out of her to go along with them, and left only two in the boat, having fastened her to the stump of a little tree on the shore. This was what I wished for, and immediately leaving Friday and the captain's mate to their business, I took the rest with me. And, crossing the creek out of their sight, we surprised the two men before they were aware, one of them lying on the shore, and the other being in the boat. The fellow on shore was between sleeping and waking, and going to start up. The captain, who was foremost, ran in upon him and knocked him down, and then called out to him in the boat to yield, or he was a dead man. They needed very few arguments to persuade a single man to yield when he saw five men upon him and his comrade knocked down. Besides, this was, it seems, one of the three who were not so hearty in the mutiny as the rest of the crew, and therefore was easily persuaded not only to yield, but afterwards to join very sincerely with us. In the meantime, Friday and the captain's mate so well managed their business with the rest that they drew them, by hallooing and answering, from one hill to another, and from one wood to another, till they not only heartily tired them, but left them where they were, very sure they could not reach back to the boat before it was dark. And indeed they were heartily tired themselves also by the time they came back to us. We had nothing now to do but to watch for them in the dark, and to fall upon them, so as to make sure work with them. It was several hours after Friday came back to me before they came back to their boat. And we could hear the foremost of them, long before they came quite up, calling to those behind to come along. I could also hear them answer, and complain how lame and tired they were, and not able to come any faster, which was very welcome news to us. At length they came up to the boat, but it was impossible to express their confusion when they found the boat fast aground in the creek, the tide ebbed out, and their two men gone. We could hear them call one to another in a most lamentable manner, telling one another they were got into an enchanted island, that either there were inhabitants in it, and they should all be murdered, or else there were devils and spirits in it, and they should be all carried away and devoured. They hallooed again, and called their two comrades by their names a great many times, but no answer. After some time we could see them, by the little light there was, run about, wringing their hands like men in despair, and sometimes they would go and sit down in the boat to rest themselves, then come ashore again, and walk about again, and so the same thing over again. My men would fain have had me give them leave to fall upon them at once in the dark, but I was willing to take them at some advantage, so as to spare them, and kill as few of them as I could. And especially I was unwilling to hazard the killing of any of our men, knowing the others were very well armed. I resolved to wait, to see if they did not separate. And therefore, to make sure of them, I drew my ambuscade nearer, and ordered Friday and the captain to creep upon their hands and feet as close to the ground as they could, that they might not be discovered, and get as near them as they could possibly, before they offered to fire. They had not been long in that posture when the boatswain, who was the principal ringleader of the mutiny, and had now shown himself the most dejected and dispirited of all the rest, came walking towards them with two more of the crew. The captain was so eager at having this principal rogue so much in his power that he could hardly have patience to let him come so near as to be sure of him, for they only heard his tongue before, but when they came nearer, the captain and Friday, starting up on their feet, let fly at them. The boatswain was killed upon the spot. The next man was shot in the body and fell just by him, though he did not die till an hour or two after, and the third ran for it. At the noise of the fire I immediately advanced with my whole army, which was now eight men, viz. Myself, Generalissimo, Friday, my lieutenant-general, the captain and his two men, and the three prisoners of war whom we had trusted with arms. We came upon them, indeed, in the dark, so that they could not see our number. And I made the man they had left in the boat, who was now one of us, to call them by name, to try if I could bring them to a parley, and so perhaps might reduce them to terms. Which fell out just as we desired, for indeed it was easy to think, as their condition then was, they would be very willing to capitulate.
So he calls out as loud as he could to one of them, "Tom Smith! Tom Smith!" Tom Smith answered immediately, "Is that Robinson?" For it seems he knew the voice. The other answered, "Aye, aye." "For God's sake, Tom Smith, throw down your arms and yield, or you are all dead men this moment." "Who must we yield to?" "Where are they?" says Smith again. "Here they are," says he. "Here's our captain, and 50 men with him have been hunting you these 2 hours. The boatswain is killed, Will Fry is wounded, and I am a prisoner, and if you do not yield, you are all lost." "Will they give us quarter, then?" says Tom Smith, "and we will yield." "I'll go and ask, if you promise to yield," said Robinson. So he asked the captain, and the captain himself then calls out, "You, Smith, you know my voice. If you lay down your arms immediately and submit, you shall have your lives, all but Will Atkins." Upon this Will Atkins cried out, "For God's sake, Captain, give me quarter. What have I done? They have all been as bad as I." Which, by the way, was not true. For it seems this Will Atkins was the first man that laid hold of the captain when they first mutinied, and used him barbarously in tying his hands and giving him injurious language. However, the captain told him he must lay down his arms at discretion and trust to the governor's mercy, by which he meant me, for they all called me governor. In a word, they all laid down their arms and begged their lives, and I sent the man that had parleyed with them and 2 more, who bound them all. And then my great army of 50 men, which, with those 3, were in all but 8, came up and seized upon them and upon their boat, only that I kept myself and 1 more out of sight for reasons of state. Our next work was to repair the boat, and think of seizing the ship. And as for the captain, now he had leisure to parley with them, he expostulated with them upon the villainy of their practices with him, and upon the further wickedness of their design, and how certainly it must bring them to misery and distress in the end, and perhaps to the gallows. They all appeared very penitent, and begged hard for their lives. As for that, he told them they were not his prisoners, but the commanders of the island, that they thought they had set him on shore in a barren, uninhabited island, but it had pleased God so to direct them that it was inhabited, and that the governor was an Englishman, that he might hang them all there, if he pleased. But as he had given them all quarter, he supposed he would send them to England to be dealt with there as justice required, except Atkins, whom he was commanded by the governor to advise to prepare for death, for that he would be hanged in the morning. Though this was all but a fiction of his own, yet it had its desired effect. Atkins fell upon his knees to beg the captain to intercede with the governor for his life, and all the rest begged of him for God's sake that they might not be sent to England. It now occurred to me that the time of our deliverance was come, and that it would be a most easy thing to bring these fellows in to be hearty in getting possession of the ship. So I retired in the dark from them, that they might not see what kind of a governor they had, and called the captain to me. When I called, at a good distance, one of the men was ordered to speak again and say to the captain, "Captain, the commander calls for you." And presently the captain replied, "Tell His Excellency I am just coming." This more perfectly amazed them, and they all believed that the commander was just by with his 50 men. Upon the captain coming to me, I told him my project for seizing the ship, which he liked wonderfully well, and resolved to put it in execution the next morning. But in order to execute it with more art, and to be secure of success, I told him we must divide the prisoners, and that he should go and take Atkins and 2 more of the worst of them, and send them pinioned to the cave where the others lay. This was committed to Friday and the 2 men who came on shore with the captain. They conveyed them to the cave as to a prison, and it was indeed a dismal place, especially to men in their condition. The others I ordered to my bower, as I called it, of which I have given a full description, and as it was fenced in and they pinioned, the place was secure enough, considering they were upon their behaviour. To these in the morning I sent the captain, who was to enter into a parley with them, in a word to try them, and tell me whether he thought they might be trusted or not to go on board and surprise the ship. He talked to them of the injury done him, of the condition they were brought to, and that, though the governor had given them quarter for their lives as to the present action, yet that if they were sent to England they would all be hanged in chains, but that if they would join in so just an attempt as to recover the ship, he would have the governor's engagement for their pardon. Anyone may guess how readily such a proposal would be accepted by men in their condition. They fell down on their knees to the captain and promised, with the deepest imprecations, that they would be faithful to him to the last drop, and that they should owe their lives to him, and would go with him all over the world.
that they would own him as a father to them as long as they lived.
Well, says the captain, I must go and tell the governor what you say and see what I can do to bring him to consent to it. So he brought me an account of the temper he found them in, and that he verily believed they would be faithful. However, though we might be very secure, I told him he should go back again and choose out those five, and tell them, that they might see he did not want men, that he would take out those five to be his assistants, and that the governor would keep the other two, and the three that were sent prisoners to the castle, my cave, as hostages for the fidelity of those five. And that if they proved unfaithful in the execution, the five hostages should be hanged in chains alive on the shore. This looked severe and convinced them that the governor was in earnest. However, they had no way left them but to accept it, and it was now the business of the prisoners, as much as of the captain, to persuade the other five to do their duty. Our strength was now thus ordered for the expedition. First, the captain, his mate and passenger. Second, the two prisoners of the first gang, to whom, having their character from the captain, I had given their liberty and trusted them with arms. Third, the other two that I had kept till now in my bower pinioned, but on the captain's motion had now released. Fourth, these five released at last, so that there were 12 in all, besides five we kept prisoners in the cave for hostages. I asked the captain if he was willing to venture with these hands on board the ship, but as for me and my man Friday, I did not think it was proper for us to stir, having 7 men left behind. And it was employment enough for us to keep them asunder and supply them with victuals. As to the 5 in the cave, I resolved to keep them fast, but Friday went in twice a day to them to supply them with necessaries. And I made the other 2 carry provisions to a certain distance, where Friday was to take them. When I showed myself to the 2 hostages, it was with the captain, who told them I was the person the governor had ordered to look after them, and that it was the governor's pleasure they should not stir anywhere but by my direction. That if they did, they would be fetched into the castle and be laid in irons, so that as we never suffered them to see me as governor, I now appeared as another person, and spoke of the governor, the garrison, the castle, and the like upon all occasions. The captain now had no difficulty before him but to furnish his 2 boats, stop the breach of one, and man them. He made his passenger captain of one with 4 of the men. And himself, his mate, and 5 more went in the other, and they contrived their business very well, for they came up to the ship about midnight. As soon as they came within call of the ship, he made Robinson hail them, and tell them they had brought off the men and the boat, but that it was a long time before they had found them, and the like, holding them in a chat till they came to the ship's side. When the captain and the mate, entering first with their arms, immediately knocked down the 2nd mate and carpenter with the butt-end of their muskets, being very faithfully seconded by their men. They secured all the rest that were upon the main and quarter-decks, and began to fasten the hatches, to keep them down that were below. When the other boat and their men, entering at the 4 chains,